The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet. Content may be discussed that could be distressing to you depending on where you are in your healing journey. If the episode becomes triggering, practice self-care by turning off the episode. If you need to talk to someone, you can always contact your local crisis center or RAIN's national hotline via chat on their website at rain.org or by calling 1-800-656-HOPE. All the links are provided in the show notes. Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for being with me here again for this episode. Today, I'm really excited. I have Matana with me today, and she is the host of the Hope to Recharge podcast. And this podcast is all about bringing hope and community to those who are struggling with depression and anxiety. So I am very excited to have you here to hear your story and what you have done with your story, how you're giving back and helping others through their struggles. So thank you so much for being here with me.
Thank you for having me. I want to say it was one of the most gracious podcast hosts. I speak to a lot, and as soon as I put up that it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and I started planning Mental Health Awareness Month a little bit too late because coronavirus. I was very late in the game. And I originally wanted to be on like 20 podcasts that at least 5 days a week, it will be somebody listening about breaking the stigma. But I said, you know what? I'm going to do the best I can with what I have. And I put it out there that I wanted to speak to anybody that's willing to break the stigma with their listeners. And I was so grateful that you were so responsive and so kind and so welcoming. So I'm happy and honored to be here. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy to have you. Yes, Mental Health Awareness Month, Mental Health Month, breaking the stigma. I'm very excited to have you. I'm excited. I say that a lot. To have you sharing all about that. And you have a big anniversary for your podcast, right?
Yes. So yesterday was episode number 100.
Wow.
Yes. We started last year. It's not even a year. We started in May, but we started in May 28th. So so it's almost a year, and so much has happened. And I knew nothing about podcasting before. All I knew was that once I was really doing well with my mental health, and I was feeling strong enough to give back after all the years of receiving, and working. I said, okay, I'm ready. And for 2 years, I was dreaming about having a podcast. And I kept on going to Lewis House's events and following everything he does. And I remember coming back from one of his events, I think it was 3 years ago, and I bought my first mic. I came back. I was so excited. I'm like, I'm buying the mic. I ordered it right away that day. I ordered it on Amazon. It sat in my house in the Amazon box, unopened. The Amazon box was unopened for a year and a half, maybe even longer, until I moved to another house and it came in this, and it transferred to the other house in a closed box. That was my fear. I had this dream of sharing my story, and I share my story a lot, but I wanted it to be on a platform that gets everywhere for free. And I was so determined to pay it forward and to bring hope and to tell people, if I recovered, you should definitely try. And the joy that one has after recovery, after such darkness, it's a joy that you never experienced in your life before. And I was very good before. Before I got depressed, I was really, really, really good. And then I got depressed and I got really sick. And then I healed after years. And the joy that I experience nowadays is just on a different vibration, something else that And I always say, like, it was worth going through it, even though it was like hell to go through it. But to be on the other side and to experience life in such a colorful way is a gift. My name in Hebrew is gift. And Matana means gift. And it's a very rare name in Israel. I grew up in Israel. It's a very rare name. You would think that it's a common name to give, like, as present gift, but it's not. It's really rare. I was the only Matana growing up. And everybody used to call me, oh, you're a gift to the world. You're a gift to the world. Or you're going to give me a gift. But I really felt that I was gifted my life back away. There's a reason why my parents called me Matana, because I was gifted my life back again after feeling dead, literally dead. So now that I started Hope to Recharge and I started my podcast and I can share, I didn't think that within a year I would come so far and it would be so easy. In the beginning was like, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? And then I turn the mic on and I'm like, oh my God, you just speak. You just share as if you're like meeting someone for a coffee. I do this all the time. I'm loving this. And then I realized through podcasting how much I did not know about mental illness. Every person I interviewed, I learned. I evolved. It was such a growing experience for me that I felt that I got more than I gave. So I'm grateful to be here a year later. And I feel like I got 10 years of education in less than a year.
That is amazing. That I'm going through that right now with this being, oh, I think there's 10 episodes out now. And same thing, I was so nervous. And then I just did it. I just talked and recorded for the first time. And it was amazing. And I love how you said being able to reach as many people as possible with your message and for free. Right. So that's exactly what I wanted to do as well. And spot on with how much, I don't know, it's euphoric, it's blissful, the happiness and the life you experience after healing.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I would love to hear more about your story, as much as you would want to share as little your struggle. And yeah, I'd love to hear.
So it's a little bit long, so probably going to be like 10 minutes speaking. So if there's anything that you want to interrupt me in the middle, so feel free.
Okay.
I like giving a background of where I came from, that I like that people should understand what happened to me. So I'm an Orthodox Jew. I was actually born in Peoria, Illinois. My parents had two kids before me. I was the third child. And when I was two, they decided that they're going to move to Israel. They're going to do a leap of faith and live the dream of the Jewish person and live in poverty in Israel. They said, we want it so badly, we're willing to live in poverty. My father was a principal multiple times in the States. Going to Israel, he could not find the proper replacement to the magnitude of the job that he had in America. And he just took a teaching job. In the beginning, it was really, really hard to just get into the Israeli culture. My mom was pregnant when she came. She had a baby right away. Then she had two more babies. So I'm one of six. And we moved many times until I think I was maybe, I want to say I was in second grade or third grade until we moved to the last place where my parents still live now. And we had to evolve into the Israeli culture. Very different. Very, 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 very different. And the ultra-Orthodox culture, for someone that doesn't experience it firsthand, they can't understand how little things matter in differences. So, for example, I was embarrassed that my parents had an American accent. Everybody's going to know that we're American. We're not going to fit in as the Israeli. We're not going to be the ultra-Orthodox people, because it was like a stigma back then that the Americans that come to Israel are a little bit more modern. And no one wanted to be the more modern, open-minded person. Imagine very, very, I would say in a way, narrow-minded culture. Like, we're all the same. We dress the same. We talk the same. We do, everything is the same. We eat the same. That's what it was like growing up. And I used to tell my mom when she used to come to PTAs or gatherings in school when I was in first grade, Ma, don't open your mouth. I don't want anybody to hear your accent. just sit in silence. And I wouldn't invite anybody over to my house because I didn't want anybody to know. We had a TV. When my sister was older, she used to hide the TV because TV was like, you're not allowed to have a TV. You're not allowed to have a radio. You can't be exposed to the outside world. That was the culture that I grew up. As we grew up, we gave up the TV because my sister was having such a hard time. And we also went into a community that it was unacceptable. You cannot live in our community if there's a TV. The radio was a little bit more okay, and there were only like two or three channels. It wasn't like there were thousands of channels, but a lot of people were against radio. I remember a friend of mine once came to my house, and she said, my father doesn't let us listen to the radio. And I was like, hide the radio. That's what it was. Yeah. Very, very orthodox, but in a bad way. It was a great life. My parents were the most loving, nurturing parents you can imagine. Our home was always open to everyone. It was like a Grand Central Station. I think thousands and thousands of people went through our home. Every weekend, there's like a celebration, a Sabbath. Every weekend, we had 20 people at our table, even though we didn't have money to feed ourselves. But for somehow, we had food on the table, and my mother was always cooking, working, dining. There was always room on the floor to sleep for someone, if it was for the child or for the guest. Always had people over. As we got older, my parents were a little bit more financially stable. My mother got a job. My father got us, he was a teacher and a tutor and a photographer. So there was a little bit more income, but we were never lavish. My parents never owned a car. My parents never ate meat during the year if it wasn't a holiday. We had chicken maybe twice a week as a luxury. Very basic. Yeah, I never got new shoes or clothes. Never. I always took my sister's hand-me-down, even for holidays. Like, you don't get new unless you work and you can buy your own. So that was the upbringing, but tons of love and fun and fun and fun and fun. So we had our struggles of just being a little bit different than everyone, but the love was unconditional always. Growing up, I wanted to be in the box. I kept on wanting to just fit in. I wanted to fit in. And then when I was 18, I decided that I wanted to travel a little bit. I met a friend that was traveling to a year in Hong Kong. And she said that she was going to do to be a teacher in the Jewish community. And I said, I'm coming along. And she's like, your parents are never going to let you. And we were very different cultures within the Orthodox. Within the Orthodox world, there's like tons of different streams, and you have to fit in the stream. And she knew the stream so well. She's like, it's not going to fly with them. There is no way they're going to let you. I said, listen, I'm 18 already. I can come. I convinced them. It was a big battle. I convinced them. I went to Hong Kong. It changed my life. I suddenly realized that there's so much to Orthodox that I was not even exposed to. There's so much beauty that I was not taught. There's so much love. There's so much more to it. And it was my first time of being outside and looking to the inside and reflecting. And it was a fantastic year. That was the hardest year. Because I was with one friend, we were living by a rabbi and teaching every single day. It was a hard year, but the most fantastic year. I have friends till today from there that I keep in touch with all the time. This is 25, 26 years ago. I move back after that year. I get a job, then I get another job. I work in technology. I'm really getting up the ladder. I'm not going to go into the whole thing with my mentor, but I'm really making it up in this technology world. I'm working in the number one firm for software in Israel. A lovely lady by the name of Rachel was the CEO of the company. My two older sisters worked there, and she was very into empowering women. And my sisters loved working there, and she always used to say, I'm going to take you to. And I said, I don't know computers. I don't know what I'm going to help you. I know nothing about computers, and I have no desire to learn computers. At the time, I was a graphic artist, digital printing, and I was running a department there. I was doing great. And she said, when you're done with this job, wherever you are now, come to me. And I really had a burnout there because I just didn't like the work ethics there and I had to leave. And I came to her and she's like, just come. I don't know what you're going to do for me. Just follow me. And she said, follow me around for 2 weeks and then we'll decide what we're going to do with you. So I was following her around. It was one of the hardest things, but she treated me with so much love, but also strict. She's Israeli. Israelis are strict. Remember, it's a military country. You say what you mean. You say it straightforward, but you love with a full heart. After 2 weeks, I became project manager. And I worked there, I want to say 4 years. And I had over 30 employees under me that I was running the show. I was a project manager and it was really like fantastic. Now I knew in the Orthodox world, usually in my circles where I grew up, a female girl starts to think about marriage when they're like 18, 19, 20. I was 24 and not even like dating seriously. And my parents were like dying. Like my sisters were married with children, popping out kids every year. And they're like, when are you, like, do you want to get married? I'm like, no, I'm having fun. I was traveling the world. I was in China, in Africa, in Australia, in Thailand, everywhere in Europe. I was living the dream. The company gave me a company car with everything paid vacation. It was just amazing. And I'm like, why would I want to get married and work hard and like give birth every year if this is like the life I want to have? I happened to have met my husband, which is another other story. He was from America. Now I knew that if I wanted, one of the things that I said was this, when I get married, I want to have children. And I want to be able to be available for them emotionally. And if I work full-time like my sisters, my body will fall apart. I won't be able to. My sisters get up very early in the morning. They're out the door before their kids are. They work so hard. They're super accomplished. And then they come home at 5, 6 o'clock or 4 o'clock. And then they have to make dinner. One has 11 kids. One has 9 kids. And they're like, and they travel a ton. Yes. Wow. One is the CEO of the largest nonprofit for women in Israel, and one is the COO of a drilling company in Israel. Like, they're really powerhouses. And I said, I can't do this. I cannot do this. And I know. And I said, I told my mom, if and when I get married, I want to raise my children. I don't want to have to worry about clocking myself out early in the morning. The good thing is that God sent me a husband that lives in America, and I would have to leave my work, my job that I loved with all my heart and soul, in order to marry him. So I moved to America, which was perfect for me because I needed like a fresh, it would be too hard for me to disconnect from the incredible job and my community that I had there, my friends. It was just like a lifestyle that was amazing. So I moved to America. I start my life from scratch. I have a baby. I have another baby and I have another baby. So I have 3 children in, wasn't so fast. I have 3 children in about 6 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Everything's great. We're traveling to Israel 2 or 3 times a year. They're coming to visit us. We're really just enjoying life. We bought a home. We built our home. Our kids are starting to go to school. It's really lovely. Life is great. And I'm enjoying being a housewife. I'm enjoying not having to run out every day. And I'm just enjoying my children. Once I go to my youngest was 2.5 or 3 years old. I go to Israel and I'm going very often. If there's any like celebration, I get on a plane, even if it's for 3 days, it's a 12-hour journey, but it's fine. I get on a plane, I come back, and at least I'm there with my family. That was one of my things that my family is so tight. I wouldn't give up on not being there not sharing in their joys if right. I can, if I'm not due to give birth or something like that. I come back and this is where my mental health crisis goes. So until now, just to recap, I'm a happy, fun American girl that has all her dreams come true. Her
husband, lots of awesome experiences. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Everything under the belt. I traveled the world. I made a ton of money. Before I got married, my husband was supporting the family. I had a beautiful home. We bought a home. We built it up. 3 adorable children. a new minivan. Everything is great. Everything is just phenomenal. Coffee dates with my friends. I have a housekeeper that helps me. What could be better? I go to Israel. I come back. I go on my own because it was a very short trip. And I come back. It's, by the way, this month is the anniversary, 10-year anniversary from that. It happened in May. I go to Israel. And in May, we have a Jewish holiday. And I come back the day before the holiday. Now, imagine Thanksgiving, but for 3 days, and you eat twice during the day, once in the morning and once at night. That's a Jewish holiday by us. So we have 3 days, that means 6 meals, and every meal is tons of people. And I was a huge entertainer. I took after my mom, always entertaining. I loved cooking. I loved beautiful things. And before I left to Israel, I stocked up my freezer and I made sure that I have the right menus and everything set. I come back and I'm so jet lagged. We're 7 hours apart, 12-hour journey. Okay. And I'm in Israel for 3 days. I go, my sister's son is turning 13. It's a big celebration. I come home. I come home the day before the holiday. This holiday, I'm like so tired at night. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to fall asleep on the couch a little bit. My husband's like, you know what? It's a holiday that we traditionally, we learned the Bible the whole night. The men learned the Bible the whole night. It's the holiday that we received the Bible. So my husband said, you know what? I'm going to just stay up here in the living room and I'm going to study here instead of going to the synagogue. I'll just study here. The kids are sleeping. I'm on the couch. 2 a.m. I wake up. And my husband's name is Ari. I said, Ari, I'm not feeling well. He's like, yeah, you're jet lagged. That's what happens to you. Don't you remember? You don't feel well. You're like, you're exhausted. You feel like your body's falling apart. I said, no, Ari, I'm really not feeling well. He's like, okay, just go up to your bed. Try to fall back asleep. Take a rest. It's fine. I said, no, Ari, I'm dying. He said, no, you're not. You're fine. You're jet lagged. I said, no, Ari, I'm dying. And I start crying and I said, Ari, call 911. There's the Jewish 911 of the community. And it's usually like friends in the community that come within 30 seconds. Wow. It's a community 911. And there's always a neighbor that's a part of this 911. I said, and the name is Hatzala. I said, Ari, call Hatzala. I'm dying. I thought I was either having a heart attack or I couldn't even explain what I was feeling. It was like an out of body experience. And I really felt like there was no return and I can't keep my soul inside me. And I start crying, shaking out of control. And he takes me upstairs and I'm trying to breathe. I can't breathe. Within 20 minutes, I think I completely passed out. I was shivering, shaking, sweating. He calls the Jewish 911 Hatzala. They come, 6 people are in my house. Now remember, my kids are sleeping and all the beepers are going off and they're trying to wake me up. And I'm screaming and yelling, I'm dying, like trying to catch my breath. I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying. And they're like, and they're taking my heart. I remember they take my heart and they're like, call the ambulance now, call the ambulance. I forgot what it's called. Maybe they were saying cardiac arrest. I don't know. I don't remember exactly, but they're like, call ambulance now. I was on a stretcher within less than 3 minutes. Now we had no family in America. We had nobody. And my husband had to stay behind because we had 3 sleeping babies in the house.
Right.
So I go alone to the hospital. Completely, I felt more safe in the ambulance because they put on oxygen. I had these people around me that if I do pass out, they'll revive me. And I remember crying. I said, am I going to be okay? Am I going to live? I'm going to live. I'm like, Mr. Jacob, you have to stop talking. I get to the hospital. They run all the tests on me. EKG, EEG, blood tests, everything, CAT scan, brain to see if there's anything in the brain. At about 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, the doctor comes and they check on me. They're really nice staff, amazing staff. They check on me and they say, you're all good. You're great. All your tests came back that you're perfect. I said, okay, so something's wrong with the test because I'm not perfect. So should we run tests again?
Yeah.
They're like, no, you're really fine. I said, no. What I felt yesterday was death. I'm not fine. I know what fine is. My whole life I feel fine. This is not fine. I almost died last night. I don't want to go home and then have this again. I need to know what's wrong. Is it my heart? Is it, did I have something explode in my brain? Like what was it? Like, it was a panic attack. I said, what's a panic attack? And they're like, here's some literature. You're probably going to have it again. It comes with anxiety. So here's some papers that you should read, how to breathe through panic attacks, because it's probably going to start becoming part of your life. It's usually something that has to do with mental illness. Sometimes you experience depression with it. Call your local doctor and speak to them. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm sick. I'm crazy. I'm that crazy person that no one's going to want to be my friend. Everybody's going to alienate me. I'm going to be that person that's going to be walking in the street and people are going to be walking away because she looks scary and all these horrible things. And I come home and I said to my husband, I said, I don't know what to do. They said that it was a panic attack. And now this is the middle of the holiday. I had a whole house of guests coming in a few hours for them for lunch.
Oh no.
And on a Jewish holiday, you can't use, as an Orthodox, you don't use a phone, you don't use a car. I had to come home in a taxi that was paid, no money. There's no electronics used, turned on or off. So I couldn't even tell anybody, don't come. So I had to put on a smile, and I was sick to my stomach thinking that I'm crazy. And I knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
So the 3-day holiday goes by. I don't sleep. I'm not sleeping. By the third day, my anxiety was so high, I couldn't get out of bed. I could not lift myself. I was afraid to drive my kids to school. I was afraid to be on my own. So I had a few episodes like this, again, back to the hospital, calling the 911. After me calling 5 to 10 times, I don't remember exactly because it was every time I used to say, oh, I'm dying, I can't breathe, I'm dying. Now, he didn't know what it was really because he never experienced a panic attack and he doesn't know what mental illness is. And every time I used to get into sweats and heavy breathing, he used to call 911 because he doesn't want me passing out again. So after a bunch of times, a friend of ours that was part of the 911, he said, listen, I live down the block. Don't call the whole community. Just text me. And he was the sweetest person. He said, I myself suffer from panic attacks. I know what you're going through. I'm going to tell you what you need to do. And I know part of the process is to reassure you that you're going to be okay. But when we reassure you, it has to be only someone that went through it. You're not going to believe someone that didn't. So he said, I'm going to come and I'm going to check your pressure and I'm going to breathe with you and we're going to do this together. And that's what happened. I used to call him and I'm like, I think I'm having a panic attack. So this was going on for 2 months. I didn't drive. I didn't go out of the house. I was not sleeping. Nightmares, anxiety, crazy. I lost 20 to 30 pounds. I used to say, if I swallow this tiny little shake, it was my goal to either eat a half a banana a day and a half of a nutrient shake, those protein shakes.
Protein.
That I know that I'm not going to die. I had to say, okay, I have to feed my body that I don't die. So if I get that much into my body, I'm not going to die. And that was my goal of the day, to drink that. That was my goal. And at the time, I had amazing friends. My husband was super supportive. He said, you take care of you. And you need to tell us what you need. I'm going to take care of the kids. You don't worry about the kids. You don't worry about anything. You just have to be okay.
That's awesome.
And my friends used to come out and they used to open the shades and say, get out of bed. We're going to put on makeup. We're going to take you for a ride. We're going to hold you. I was so weak. I couldn't even walk. I literally couldn't walk. And the anxiety was getting so bad that I was having terrible nightmares. falling asleep for a second and waking up with like sweat and I couldn't breathe. And I was afraid to fall asleep because maybe I'm going to die in my sleep. And I kept on saying to myself, I need a heal. I have three little kids at home. They kept on coming and like, Mom, is mommy going to be okay? Is mommy going to die? Like, they didn't know what's going to happen to mommy. And when I hit a low of like the depression started going up and up and up and up and up because I was feeling so weak. My depression got higher and higher and higher. And suddenly I felt like this black hole took me over. I think this was August. August, I call my mom and I say, Ma, get on a plane right now and make sure I find the best doctors to heal me. I can no longer do this. The pain is too strong. I don't know what I'm going through. I don't know what this mental illness is, but I know I was okay before. And you're going to make sure that, first of all, we're going to rule out that there's really nothing physically wrong with me. We're going to go back to every single doctor and we're going to find the top of the line of everyone, like the top brain surgeon and the top cardiologist and the top, any top doctor we can go to, psychiatrist. We're going to go to everyone top and we're going to make sure that we know what's wrong with Matana. And she said to me, so it was a fast day. In the Orthodox world, like there's many fast days and some are more serious than others. So my mother said, should I wait until after the fast or do you want me to get on the plane now? I said, you can wait 5 hours till the fast ends, then get on a plane and come. She was by us within 24 hours and she did exactly what I wanted. Even though she knew that what mental illness was, she knew what really needed to be done. But another smart thing that she knew, that there's no way to convince me. I need to go through the checklist and myself in order to know, which was like the most brilliant thing of my mother and my husband. So she's like, okay, where do you want, what, tell us where you want to go. And I made a list and they made appointments. And I remember my father-in-law was driving us to all the doctors in the city and he would just wait that we didn't have to park or anything like that. It was like amazing, the team. And then my friends would take over that Ari can come with me. It was just incredible. I go to all the doctors, they're fine. I go to site and then I call my aunt. I had an episode with a psychiatrist that was awful, local psychiatrist. He put me on meds. He's like, oh, you have depression, take this meds. I was suicidal that night. And I couldn't get in touch with him. And I said to my husband, if this is medication, can you imagine what the illness is? I said, I need a doctor that I can communicate with. This is not okay. And I was really about to just end it. I said, the darkness is too dark. I can't take it. I called my aunt that's a therapist in New York City. And I said, and she's one of the top-notch therapists. I said, where do you send your clients to? I said, I want that psychiatrist. So she gave me a psychiatrist, Dr. Parker, which I owe him my life. Park Avenue, $500 an hour, like brain surgery. But my husband said, listen, when it comes to the brain, you can't do average. You need to take, like, it's literally like brain surgery. You have to, when you go to a psychiatrist, you need to go to the best. So we went, and for 3 hours, he sat there with me explaining to me what panic attacks are and why are they connected to anxiety, like anxiety and depression. What happened to my brain? How do I rewire my brain? What has to be done? And he said, and you know what? And people heal from it. And he said, and the good thing is we live in a generation, in an age that there's so many medications out there. We could tweak you. We could see what works for you. We can try it out. And you're going to be okay. And I said, I'm going to be normal? You mean I'm not going to be crazy? You mean I'm going to sleep again? You mean I'm going to eat again? You mean I'm going to be able to take my kids to the park again? And he's like, yeah. He said, you will be surprised how many people walk around you that are working with you, that are taking medication, that are going through exactly what you're going through. They're just on a very good medication and they're okay now. And they're really okay. And I'm like, okay, how fast does the medication work? Just give it to me. Give it to me. And he says, I'm going to give you three different medications and we're going to do it slowly, gradually. And you're going to text me and call me and you're going to tell me how you're doing. Yes.
That's
and he checked
amazing
in.
Doctor.
Yeah, I know. So unusual. He checked in on me every 24 hours and he said, if you're not feeling well, just call me. And he explained to me the different cocktails of the medication. One's going to be for long-term and one is for when a panic attack comes on. I know I'm talking a lot, but now this is where it evolves, you know? So,
yeah.
So I start taking medication and thank God he gave me Klonopin, which Klonopin was like the magic pill. You take it right after a panic attack or you feel a panic attack coming on and within 20 minutes, you're fine. You're really fine. The downside of Klonopin is the more you take, the more your body craves it. And then the dose goes up. And the side effects are you're fatigued, you can gain weight. Everybody has different, or you don't have an appetite. I lost a lot of my memory from the Klonopin, and I'm sure it's from the Klonopin. I just lost it. I used to be sharp as a wizard, and I lost it. It just fogged me. But I needed to take. Now, I just want to give you an example of what this Klonopin is. I call it the magic pill. So at the time, I took 3 Klonopins a day of 0.5. And feel free to take this out of the episode if you feel like it's inappropriate or whatever. But I think it's important for people to understand. And no one should self-medicate. No one. Because what could be a super drug for me could be deathly for somebody else. Literally. Right. No one should ever ask a friend, what are you taking? Should ask on a group, what are you taking? Only by a doctor that is monitoring you. Because the first time I took medication, he said, everybody's amazing with it. You'll function tomorrow. And I was suicidal that night. So no one should take medication without being monitored by a doctor. So this Klonopin, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. The first time I was put on medication, because I had a similar experience with a therapist and then some good experiences with therapists too. But that night I was suicidal. I was divorced at the time and I had to call my ex-husband and ask him to pick up the kids because I had just snapped. And that same medication, I've known people that were on that medication and they swear by it. So
exactly.
It's your body. Yeah.
So important, so important. I say this so often because medication can save your life or end your life. So yeah. Just make sure you're doing it right. So then I took 3 a day. If I take a half now, if I take a half, not a whole, a half of the 3 that I was taking, I fall asleep for 12 hours. That's how much anxiety I had. And at night I had to take a sleeping pill to knock me out because I couldn't sleep. So that's how much anxiety I was in my body.
This torture.
Torture. I felt like creatures were crawling under my skin. My heart would jump out of my body. But the Klonopin really just like gave me an ease. And within a month, I was just getting back to myself. I still had a lot of fears. I still had a fear of like judgment. Will I be normal again? Will I be able to entertain again? Will I be able to go out with my friends again? I was slowly going back to the world, slowly, very slowly. But what happened was when my mother stayed with us for like 3 weeks to a month, and then we said, okay, fine, let's go to Israel for a few months. I'll be with the family. It'll be good for me to be with all my brothers and sisters. The kids can be with my parents and their cousins, and mommy can heal slowly. And that's what we did. And we were in Israel, I think, for 3 months until I felt strong enough to come back. And I came back to America, but there was an underlying low depression. Mm-hmm. And I gained a tremendous amount of weight. People didn't recognize me. I wasn't sharp like I was. I wasn't fast. Everything was a little bit off, but I was functioning. So it was good enough for me. I still was like, I can't go alone to the park with the kids because what if I have a panic attack in the park? So there was still things that I was worried about. I started intensive therapy, different therapies. I read every single self-help book you can imagine that's out there, online programs, different things. Like I really like went deep into self-help. And I said, I am going to heal. I am determined to heal. I went to yoga every single day, sharp. That was my thing. 8 p.m., my yoga mat in the studio. That was my thing. My kids were in bed. I was in yoga twice a week meditation with a group meditation. And I was really slowly improving, slowly. So this was, I want to say, 5 years going on. Tweaking medication every now and then if I'm feeling that I'm too tired, so I would tweak the medication. I went to a much lower dose of a Klonopin, I went off the Klonopin completely unless I had a panic attack. So the panic attacks would come twice a year, which was great. Amazing. Yeah, amazing. And the whole time the community was helping me and so kind, really accepting. I didn't feel shame or anything like that. It was really amazing. And then there was a period that I said, you know what? I think I'm strong enough. I did enough work with therapists and different therapists and healers, every kind of energy healing you can imagine under the sun. The amount of money I spent on healing was I could buy 2 homes, but it was important for me. I said, I want to do it the right way. And every time you peel a layer, you find another layer that you want to see and understand. And after 5 years, I felt like I was with a good therapist and a very good healer. And I said, I think I'm ready to try to get off the medication altogether. I was talking to my psychiatrist. We tried tweaking. He said, listen, it's going to be a long process. It's not overnight. You have to do it slowly. We tried. It didn't work. Then 6 months later, we tried and it worked. I really wanted to have another baby, but my OBGYN said, you cannot, I'm not going to let you have a baby. I mean, get pregnant when you're on these medication, the ones you're taking, it's not safe for you and it's not worth it. But I said, you know what? I want another baby. I don't want to have only 3. In my mind, 3 was a little bit. And this time I was able to get off of it. And I was on the slightest dose of like a micro something just to keep me afloat. But my doctor said, as soon as you get pregnant, if you get pregnant, you're going to have to stop the medication. Just be ready for that. And I said, okay, cool. I get pregnant. It wasn't easy for me to get pregnant. It wasn't easy. And I get pregnant. And the first 2 months was brutal. Brutal. And I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? The hormones, and I was off everything. And I kept on saying, can I just take a Klonopin? And he's like, no, sorry, you cannot. He's like, unless you're really on a verge of ending your life, I'm not going to let you take a Klonopin. Try to wait it out. He said, the second trimester is easier. You'll be okay. Just get through the first trimester. I got through the first trimester. And for the 6 months afterwards, I was in fear of postpartum depression. Was in severe fear. What if I regress? What if I go back to what I was? I refused to go back there. So I was working with a healer from Israel at the time on the phone. And for 6 months, we did sessions 3 times a week to just build my energy and to keep me afloat so I can be okay when I give birth. That hopefully I won't have postpartum. And she kept on saying, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And I said, but I don't want to go back on medication. I'm done. I it's so good to be off medication. I started feeling alive. I felt not in a cloud. When I was on medication, I always felt like a little fuzzy in a cloud, but it was better than feeling awful.
Right.
So I said, I just don't want to go back on medication. I don't want to go back on medication. So she's like, well, we'll do our best. So the last month of my pregnancy, I got on a plane to meet my healer because I never met her. And I said, I want you to do a face-to-face work with me and my baby, just that we should be okay. I went home. I gave birth. Everything was great. I did not have any postpartum. Oh, I never went back on medication. Ever since then, I'm off of medication. I had another baby. I did have a relapse of a small episode of depression. I had a little bit of a down. And we moved to Florida because we thought maybe the weather in New York is impacting me. So I said, my husband's like, let's move to Florida where the sun is shining. And I really had a horrible few months here, but I found out that I had an early ovarian failure and I was miscarrying. And every time the hormone imbalance went off, and this is something that I want to tell you audience, it's very important.
Yeah.
The hormone imbalance and the birth control that we take can completely set us off. So I'm very sensitive. I wish I knew what the hormones were doing to me. And I think that the first episode, the first episode that I had was due to a very high dose of birth control. And I wish I knew before that I have different options of birth control and what hormones to take, and they really affect your mood and your stability, and it can really lead to panic attacks and depression. And I changed many, many birth controls until I said, you know, I'm doing IUD, no hormones. And that's when I started really getting better. And then I found out that I had early ovarian failure, and that was a huge impact on my mental stability. I moved back to New York. I had another healer. I was very into the healers at the time. And I had to do a lot of old stuff, forgiveness and work and stuff like that. And we moved back to New York, and I was ever since then, I'm really doing fantastic. Thank God. Every day is exercise to not regress. Every day I have to do my checklist of hard work to make sure that I don't go into full-blown panic attack. Every day I have to do my meditation, my gratitude, my peaceful time, my forgiveness to myself, to others, my self-love, my self-compassion. If I miss a day and I don't do what I know that is important, very fast I go into a dark place. I know I spoke so much. I spent the entire time, and you didn't even ask me anything.
Okay. This is a beautiful, fascinating story. I have a whole page of notes here that I was writing down, and you're just the flow and how everything was going. I didn't want to interrupt. It was really fascinating that you were so incredibly happy, and then this episode came and just totally changed the trajectory of your life in that moment. And how you mentioned about hormones, it got me thinking. So as you're talking, I'm thinking that I had struggled with depression and anxiety my whole life. And I know when I was young, I was on birth control for like very painful cramps. Yes. And so as a teenager, they put me on birth control. Right. Now I think back, I wonder if I had the trauma I experienced, but maybe it aggravated it more. And then I started thinking when I was older, like in my young 30s, I remember because I was having panic attacks and this kind of goes along with trying to self-medicate yourself. Mm-hmm. There was this all natural cream you put on like on your thighs or your arm that's supposed to balance your hormones and would help with, and I bought it and I did it. And I remember I had just like an explosion of just anger and sadness. And my husband was like, who are you?
Exactly.
And so even that, which was this all natural thing that I just bought over the counter, you just got to be careful. But yes, now that you've got me thinking about those, about the hormones, that's something that I want to look into more. But I also wanted to let you know, I had so much, maybe I should have said this while you were talking, but I was just in, you know, all I was captivated by what you were telling me. I can totally resonate with what you were saying. For example, the reassurance, how you had to constantly reassure. And actually the name of my podcast here is that it is what I would do and what I still do when I start to spiral right here, right now, you are okay. Right here and right now. And I will even say it out loud over and over and over again until I start to calm down. Yes. And panic attacks, absolutely. I remember my first one, you feel what is happening and you feel like you are dying. It's terrifying. Right. I would love to know about when you mentioned your healer, the healers, yes, what type did they do? Like energy work? Did that like, what was that like?
Okay. So many different kinds. And still till today, I do EFT every single week.
EFT
is tapping. It's an energy, is the tapping that you have, like, you know, we have sources of energy in our body. And when we tap on them, we release either the negative or we put in the positive. So if there's a trapped emotion or a trapped something or memory or trauma, through the tapping of that energy spots, you can either release it and put something positive instead.
So I just heard about this yesterday. Really? For the first time, someone was telling me, hey, have you heard of tapping? So it's crazy. You're telling, this is awesome. Okay. Sorry. Go.
No, it's okay. I knew about tapping before my mental illness hit me. I knew about it way before because when my first son was born, first of all, I had come from a family that my mother and her sisters were all into like more holistic stuff. Mm-hmm. So I knew a lot about the holistic world. I had my best friend that was always eating organic and doing yoga and meditating. And so I was more tuned into that. And I once went to a tapping EFT practitioner when my baby was born because he had severe sensory. And we thought that maybe it was from a trauma from when I was pregnant or something like that. So when I read books, I kept on reading books because I really believe that you can't be something one day and then the next day you just become a UFO. Like, it doesn't happen like that. There has to be something that's triggering, that's like a ticking bomb, and then you just fall apart. So what is it? And the more I read books, the more I realized that it's all energy. It's all us. It's all in our mind is connected to the energy, and it's one big story that's feeding each other. And I was like, oh my God, so I can heal myself. I have the power to heal myself. This is so exciting.
Yes.
And I started researching different programs of healing, and there's a bazillion out there. And one of the messages I tell my audience, there's no one size fits all. You have to find the healer, the therapist, the cocktail that meets your needs and that will fit your family, your personality, your history, your pocket. They're expensive. Mm-hmm. And how strong you are to be able to practice these things. It's not easy. It's a tremendous amount of work. Tremendous. It's to look into the past and hurts and to forgive them and to let go and to be okay with pain, to look pain in the eye and say, I'm walking through you. It's like looking at a fire, a bonfire, and saying, I'm going to walk through you. I'm going to feel that burn, but I'm going to heal from the scabs afterwards.
Yes.
And that's what it's like. That's what
exactly. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Yeah.
That is exactly what it's like. And anyone listening, because I've had guests and I've even said myself that it's hard work. It's everyday work. I do it today. Just like you said, I do my gratitude. I've had anxiety for the past week every day, and I hadn't had it in a long time, but not to discourage anyone, because now when that starts to come up, I recognize it. Oh, I'm having anxiety. And then my mind immediately goes, oh, why? Like, what did you see? It starts to work it all out. So in the beginning, where it took like a lot of effort to really rewire your brain to on your body, now it's automatic. So when the anxiety comes, my mind kicks in and starts to work it out. And I know what I need to do, and I know what feels good for me. And I love that. And some of the tools that you had mentioned, so if people are listening and they're like, there's so much that I could look into, where do I even start? I connected with you on yoga. I had such a powerful experience with yoga. My first session, yeah. I was in tears after.
Yes. You cry a lot. And so, yeah. And you're in a safe place to cry, that everybody loves you for crying.
Yes. I think it's that those positions of your body and linked with the energy, just the breaking the energy open.
You're opening your heart, you're touching, yes. It's release. It's amazing.
Meditation, even if you're just doing it for starting with 2 minutes of quiet, right, and then go up to five. The gratitude, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have a journal and write it down. It's great to write and journal, but how about just lay there right when you wake up and just think of some gratitude. These things, even when you don't feel like doing it, it's going to have tremendous impact.
Magic. Literally magic. The book that impacted me the most when I was in the darkest was The Secret. The Secret, The Power, and The Magic. And so that was the whole law of attraction. And I didn't believe in it. I'm like, that's too off for me. Now I'm not like a witchy kind of person. Like I'm very grounded and I have a lot of fun. I'm not this like, I don't put potions all over me. And I'm not like that. But I do believe that there's a higher energy, and we can tap into it. and we control our thoughts. And when we control our thoughts, we invite things. And the secret changed my life. And I said, you know what? I don't know if it's true. I remember calling like 5 different therapists that I know. I'm like, does the secret work? Tell me that it works. Tell me that it works. I want it to work because I needed to heal. And I kept on calling people. Is there such a thing as the law of attraction? Is there a real thing? I never heard of it before. And I just went, I'm like, does it work? I'm going to try it. And I was obsessing over it, like obsessing and reading every book on the law of attraction and listening to any audio class possible. And I started practicing it and I started noticing my mind. And I noticed that a lot of my anxiety is from stories that I'm telling myself. Instead of putting healthy stories, I was feeling myself with worries and fears. Now it's normal to feel that way, but if we wake up and we count our blessings, we're starting the day on a positive note, and it usually goes in that direction. And if it veers off, do another gratitude to go, and it goes back to the positive direction. It's just like, it's literally like magic. I talk about gratitude once a week on my podcast. I have 50 episodes of gratitude. I have 50 of mental health and 50 of gratitude, because gratitude changes lives. So just, if you just do yoga, gratitude, and meditation, you're so halfway there.
Yes. Gratitude. When people would tell me that, to be honest, and you know, in the beginning, when I first started hearing about it, I'm like, you know, I was just so overwhelmed. Like I didn't think that it would make a difference. And then one day I was noticing that when I wake up, the first thing I think is, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to go to work. Those are the first thoughts I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to be gentle with myself. I'm not going to say I have to do it this way. All I'm going to do is, before I even get out of bed, I'm going to think of 3 things that I'm grateful for. That's it. Mm-hmm. And I started that. And then I noticed every morning when I wake up, that's the first thing I do naturally. But during the day, my day was so much better. And if it was frustrating or frustrations came in, I could recover quicker. So instead of going down the path of spiraling, right, I could recover quicker.
Absolutely. And by the way, I'm telling this to a lot of people. The reason why a lot of people with mental illness during Corona now are doing better than the people that never were diagnosed is because we have the toolkit. We worked for so many years to practice how to get out of crisis, how to feel uncomfortable and be okay with it. We're pros at it. We get it all the time without warning, without news feeding us directions of what to do. We're just pros at it. So yes, it's uncomfortable. And sometimes we have our highs are much higher than others and lows are lower than others. But we know how to navigate because we do this all the time, all the time. Every day we can navigate it 3, 5, 10 times in one day. We can recover 10 times a day, but we're recovering.
I love how you said that. It's so empowering.
It is.
It absolutely is. I love that. When you were telling me the story about your community and how much love and celebration and warmth there is. Now you're taking everything you experienced and you wanted to give back. And one of the statements is also to build that community. So is that the inspiration, the community that you had when you were going through what you were going through?
Yes, it's a pay it forward completely. One of the days that I was really saying, okay, this is the last day I'm giving it. Like if nothing's going to work, and I tried a lot of things and I'm like, if I'm hitting a dead end again, I'm done. I can't suffer anymore. The black is too black. And I remember standing in my window and I was looking at a tree and I said, God, if you are there. And I was debating, is God existing? Like, I grew up knowing believing that there's a God. And then I'm like, if there's a God, he would never make me feel this way. And where is he helping me now? Like, why are you not helping me? I'm a mom of 3. I did nothing wrong. I'm a good person. Heal me. Yeah. Like, really? I'm trying. Like, give me some break, you know? And I said, but if you're out there and I do heal, I'll forever pay it forward and help others find healing and hope and hold their hand. I can't heal them because I believe every person can heal themselves only. Mm-hmm. Every healer can help us, guide us. They can help us be our GPS, but we're our only healers. We and God, if you're a God-fearing person, and if not, so it's only you. Only you, your answers to go through it. And I said, I'll be that cheerleader for others. I'll be that hope. I'll be that story. I'll be that vessel to hold their pain and cry with them. I'll be that person to say, yeah, today sucked. Yes, it's awful to be in this darkness. But you know what? The sun always rises. It always comes back up again. So hold on. Hold on. Try this. Try that. And that was my desire, because I realized how fortunate I was that I had a loving husband. I had incredible brothers and sisters. I had incredible friends. I had incredible parents. I had the finances to go to top doctors, which people might not even have one of them. So if I could give a little bit, empathy, sympathy, directions, clarity, a shoulder to cry on, a listening ear, that's what I want to be doing for the rest of my life.
I love that. That's exactly how I feel for everybody that I'm serving. This is all I want to do. If I could help people feel, even if I could just help them feel like they're not alone in their suffering, yes, then I am a happy, happy woman.
Yes.
So happy that I met you and that you're in this world. So
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I just really resonated with a lot of the things that you said when you brought up your children really being a driving force into you wanting to get healthy. That was my main driving force as well. And I appreciate you sharing all the different ways that you healed yourself and how hard you worked, but how worth it was. Mm. Is there anything else before we temporarily part ways, mm-hmm, that you would like to share with the audience?
Yes. Okay, so there are a few things that I always say to people. As dark as it gets, just as the darkness is so dark, the light can be just as strong. So remember, if it is so dark, can you imagine how light the light can be? So hold on. It's not only the black that's black. It's the sun that is shining, that is so bright and beautiful. And when the hard day comes, look for someone that can help you. Don't live in silence. Don't live in pain. You are worthy. Everyone is worthy of a wonderful life. Everyone. No one deserves to live in pain alone. We have so many resources nowadays. Reach out to a support group. Reach out online. There are groups. There's so many Facebook groups that you should just say, you know what? I had a sucky day. They'll have 100 people saying, yeah, it sucked. And that feeling of just feeling that you have a place to say something is everything. If you can find a therapist, that's great. There's online therapy now that's so inexpensive, and you can sit in your desk and get therapy. Read books, go to the library, get books. There's so many resources. So don't live in pain. Reach out to help. And know that hope is everything. Hope is what will get you through darkness. Because if you look how far you came till now, and you came far, and you came this far, Jesse Itzler always says, you don't come this far to only go this far.
I love that.
You did not come this far to only go this far. So if you fought till now and it was hard, keep on fighting, keep on moving forward. Give yourself a lot of compassion. You are enough. Don't say I'm not worthy, because you are. And just keep on moving forward and don't live in silence. Reach out for help.
Oh, thank you so much. And if where can they find you if they want you to keep inspiring them? Your podcast, your wherever I can send them so that they can find you and your message.
Thank you. So my podcast is called Hope to Recharge, and everything is on my website, hopetorecharge.com. I'm on Facebook, on Instagram. I think I'm Matana Jacobs. I think I'm Matana. I'm not so tech savvy, but I post all my episodes there. My business, I actually started a business 7 years ago. It's called Charge to Recharge because it's a merchant process company that gives back to charities with mental health services. So yeah, that was my first comeback to the world, was to pay it forward. And I thought it would be amazing to have a service that keeps on generating money, and I keep on giving. So every time somebody makes money, I give. So that's what it's called, Charge to Recharge. When they charge, I recharge by giving to charity. So it's really,
that is amazing.
Incredible. Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I am, and that's where they can find me. And you can always email us for, I'm so into finding your, whatever works your way. I always give like a list of tips that I worked for me, and just research and look on YouTube, look online. There's so much to, and see what fits you. You'll for sure find something.
Yes, absolutely. You are such a blessing to this world. I'm so glad that you reached out to me and that we met. I learned a lot. I agree with you. Every single person I talk to, I learn something. I learn something, and I grow myself. And I thank you so much for that experience. And I just really enjoy talking with you. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your week.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And for all of you out there, move forward.
Yes, keep moving forward. It's so worth it.
Yes. Thanks for having me.